Hello, everybody. Welcome to Cream Guy Cooper Films Commentaries Live.
Well, then.
And I'm Chris.
I'm Craig.
I'm Jack.
And we're back with our special guest, return visit, Matt Miller.
Hello. Hello,
Hollywood and Coke Bridges, Matt Miller.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Glad to have you back.
It's like having Doctor Strange here.
It's always good to have a Coke Bridge guy in. Not so much a Hollywood guy, Coke Bridge guy.
Coke Bridge
guy. You're from Coke Bridge?
I'm Coke Bridge.
Amazing, what about?
Are
you the posh bar?
Yeah, this is the chat Craig loves.
But I just
still get family in Muir Hall Street.
No, annoys me is you claim to be from Glasgow whenever it suits you to have a go at me about being from Edinburgh. Then, of course, you claim to be from Largs whenever that suits you. And now, because Mark Miller's here with his pals from the superhero world, you have to be for Coke Bridge.
This is Craig, who likes to claim he's from Pilton in Edinburgh. When he wants to be street, and not the South Tyres, when he does
not sounding like Gavin.
Two Coke Bridge guys, it's like Furbies coming together.
I know,
we talk to each other.
We've gone in here as well. So, just so that everybody knows, and amongst all this patter,
yeah,
that's what we call it, you should be able to hear this live.
Yeah. With a delay, I have to say, there'll be a little bit of a delay.
There'll be a wee bit of a delay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Craig likes to swear.
Thanks, that old.
I think that's very unfortunate.
Shut up, you cunt.
And
then what we'll do in a wee minute is we'll start the film so that everybody who has a predilection for it can watch the film along with us. So it's Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, which you're not terribly familiar with, Matt.
I saw it in 1985, a few years after it came out. I saw it, my cousin got it on DVD, at the time VHS, and we saw it, and you know sometimes there's like a rich kid that comes into your world for a day?
Yeah, Jack.
And they've got four VHSs with them, that you'd only ever hire out one a week.
Yeah, sure.
But some kid just gets four one day, and loads of crisps, and sweets, and ginger and everything, and you're like, I'm going to know this guy for the rest of my life, this is amazing. And it was all sort of like Cannibal Holocaust, Halloween 3, all this kind of thing. So it was like stuff that
Halloween
was kind of...
Halloween 3 is better than Cannibal Holocaust.
But it was still very exciting, you know, when you... I was actually 14, and it was super exciting to see something you weren't allowed to see. I mean, I think really all movies you should see about 4 years before the number on the side of the film, you know, because then it's got that wee edge. It's like Enter the Dragon when you're 12 is much more exciting than when you're 40.
Oh, no, totally. You know? Yeah. No, absolutely.
So that's when I saw it in those circumstances, like sitting with a slightly older kid, you know, who, you know, but you change a lot in that period as well, from 14 to 16. This kid was about 16. He'd literally just been having sex with somebody or something like that. I was still talking about Knight Rider. You know, so
was he.
Wasn't David Hasselhoff, was it? So we're getting some feedback already.
Oh, really?
Who from?
To say the sound's not great. Deal with it. You're not paying for it.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll be pleased to know, somebody will be pleased to know that we're still recording it as normal, and we'll put it up on the site as soon as my computer's sorted. Yeah. So, shall we dive in?
Let's see. Yeah.
Right, so this is the Blu-ray version. I don't know if that's any different from any other version. And the Universal Stars are on screen, and I'm pressing play now.
Ooh.
And we're up.
I like the Universal logo.
I like it too. Do you think anybody's got company loyalty? You know where there's Marvel brand loyalty? People go and see Marvel movies. Do you think that exists at other studios? Do you think people are like, oh, I love Universal?
Are they not trying to do that thing now? They were trying, I know, to try and restart what they called the Universal Monsters.
Yeah, I think they're appealing to people who are 105 years old.
Because I can't imagine that's got very much cachet.
You know, I know what happened there, because I've got pals over at uni, but I did a couple of things there, and they were just looking through their back catalogue at stuff that they've got, you know. But they have got somebody brilliant on it. It's a guy called Chris Morgan, who revamped the Fast and the Furious franchise. You have to remember, Fast and the Furious was on that downward trajectory, and then they brought Chris in, and it went up, and that never happens. You know, when does a thing look as if it's going straight to DVD, and then is the biggest franchise going?
When you start shooting on Clyde Street.
Well, that's true. Aye,
yeah. So when they did that last Fast and the Furious one, and they'd be the trailer, and you'd be like, New York, the desert, Sydney. Oh, there's a suspension bridge. There's the Scottish Enterprise offices.
Apparently, our sound's got a lot better.
Apparently, since the Universal logo came on.
That
just proves it.
It's a wee bit of magic. Yeah.
Okay. So we have some excellent opening titles here.
Well, anything where it's a close-up of electronic stuff.
Yeah, well, it's a close-up of a PAL.
That's a sign of modernity.
Aren't they quite like the ones in Videodrome? Aren't they quite like that as well?
Well,
John Carpenter, music.
So tell us, Craig, you know about these things. Now, Carpenter didn't direct this.
No. It was directed by his mate. Mm-hmm. Who is it? Tommy Lee Wallace.
Is that an art director or something?
I think he was either an art director or a photographer. No, not a photographer. I think probably an editor with him. Who directed this one.
But there was a plan for these.
Yeah, and actually I think it's one of the really sad things that it was. He's shot by Dean Cundey, who shot all the Carpenter films. I think it's quite sad, really. The idea that was brilliant is the idea that killed it, really, which was that it wasn't more of Michael coming home and murdering people. The idea was to begin a franchise with a different story every year related to Halloween. And that would be a Halloween film every year, pretty much what they do now at Christmas time with the Star Wars films. But, except it would always be centred around Halloween. There you go, Tommy Lee Wallace.
Written directly.
This one died on its arse.
So that was the end of that.
And that was that. Of course, written by is contentious as well. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it died on its arse. He never did it.
Now, I have to say, this is when it starts with the...
Three more days to Halloween.
This is the song that was stuck in everybody's head. But I think we made mention before we came on air.
Yeah.
About... when we saw it, and you, you said you, or no, it was our friend Alan who's just left. Had said there was a, he was a bit disappointed because it didn't continue from two. Now I can say I saw this before I saw any of the other ones.
Oh really?
Right.
Because I did horror when I was a kid was never something I was into. And exactly the same way, hired this from, it would probably have been the Azad video in the south side in Rawson Street. And just thought it was amazing. Swearing about old shots. Fucking Azad.
We can stop now. We can just go.
And that's why... but I think probably that's why I've got a soft spot for it. Apart from the fact that it's just great.
Isn't my oldest daughter saw Jaws 2 before she saw Jaws 1?
Oh, really?
I don't know if you know this, but sometimes shops con you into buying Jaws. Jaws 2 when you think you're buying Jaws because they put the big... over the two bit. And I bought it. Because it was one of those rites of passage when she hit about 10 or something, or 11. I says, like, we're going to watch Jaws now. It's time.
Yep.
And like, and I went out to buy it, you know, because my copy, I was worried it might be a bit scratchy. And I went out and bought a new one. And I didn't realise I brought home Jaws 2. And she was so pumped up for it. I thought, well, I'll put this on and I'll show you Jaws tomorrow or whatever. And I stuck it on and she was like, that was really good. And
then, Jaws 2 is good.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. She came like you with no preconceived notion, right? Like, I've seen this first.
Yep.
Then I showed her Jaws a week later, and she was genuinely on her phone and all that. And I was like, this is one of the greatest movies ever made. And she said, it's kind of rip off of Jaws 2.
Jaws 2, directed by the hacks hack, Janet Schwab.
I've got a soft spot for that guy.
Oh, Supergirl's a great film. I definitely do. Good classic, you know, TV director starts somewhere in time. Hired in to make films. Great stuff.
Somewhere in Time's a great movie. It's in my top 100.
Jaws 2's got some fantastic sequences in it. The motorboat sequence is a brilliantly directed sequence.
And I think there's about three more deaths. I remember in school one of my pals, Rationale, in second year, he says to me, there's about three more people dying in Jaws 2, that's better. You know? And it's like, the same guy used to also like bands where the lead singer in that band looked like he could batter the lead singer in another band. You know? So he had a really odd way of evaluating things.
But the Omen films are like that, aren't they? They become, is that the one where the guy gets cut in half by the lift? Ah, that's
Omen
2.
Omen 2 is a great film as well. But it's a bit Jaws 2 and Jaws, actually. Well, we're not talking about this film at all, but we'll get to it in a minute because it's just some fucking about in the dark. Because Omen 2, I could see, would be the same thing. If you saw the Omen 2, you'd think, this is great.
Yeah.
But the Omen is one of the great films,
as
is Jaws. But the sequels are great. Now, this afternoon, you need these snacks.
Uh-huh. Yeah, have you seen this? Yeah, just so you know, my role is Mike Smith in Ghostwatch.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm monitoring the social chatter. And Graham Kibblewhite would be really interested to know what the panel are having as snacks.
All right. So Craig, onion rings. Salt and vinegar twaddly things.
Yeah, I've eaten quite a lot of them,
Generic.
Milky Ways.
Totally wee Milky Ways that you get because it's Halloween, they're going cheap. And some gummy bear things. That a friend of mine who used to work at the hospital, Penny Taylor, brought for me back from New York.
Oh, no. How long ago? Not like 8 years ago.
No.
It was for the bicentennial.
They were after 9/11.
Okay. That was all good. Now, the other thing at...
Hiya, Graham.
At the opposite point tonight, we tweeted earlier to ask people for thoughts about Nudge on the Earth.
Yeah.
We'll come to that in a bit, I think.
Yeah.
I've probably got some more.
Yeah, you can keep us up to date on that.
I will
from
do.
The
sound's got shite again.
Yeah, oh, so people, so fucking people too.
This is the power of YouTube.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
So if people could see this, it's a sort of Ken Adams, too many monitors.
I tweeted a photo of it.
So,
but Nigel Neal, weirdly enough, I always think there's that link with John Carpenter. I've always felt they're symbiotic, those guys. Mm-hmm. Like, things like Ghosts of Mars is like a Nigel Neal story.
Well, you know that.
Well, why has Nigel Neal cropped up Craig?
Because he wrote this.
I heard
that. And then, but typically with Nigel Neal, met John Carpenter for more than a minute and then fell out with him immediately and demanded that his name be taken off.
Oh,
it.
Here's the song.
It's so his name was withdrawn from it. And there's a lot of Nigel Neal in it. Especially when you start getting on later to the stuff about the old Celtic legends and the stuff from before.
Stonehenge is in this, isn't it?
Yeah,
is yeah. Well, that
which is very Nigel Neal.
They were just watching a news report there, which is a bit of Stonehenge has been stolen.
Right. I love that as a pitch. You know, what's this one about? That Stonehenge has been stolen.
Very
they've moved it to the States.
I'm also pouring, in terms of the snacks, I'm also pouring
the ginger.
The jet fuel of the commentaries. Mr. Barr's finest.
Now, Jack, you have a theory, a long-standing theory about ancient evil.
Yeah, what's my long-standing?
Do you have an ancient theory about long-standing evil?
It's a very Nigel Neal trope, ancient evil.
Yeah,
and he uses old things as a kind of shortcut to make you feel uncomfortable and evil.
Yeah, all
right. So the fact that this has got Stonehenge,
in it, the blue stone.
Yeah.
Very Nigel Neal.
But it's that idea of the modern world having no, and this apparently sophisticated modern world having no defences against something much older that they don't understand. That's every Nigel Neal story.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's like, you know, like stone taking thing. It's the stuff that's an ancient horror that's been there before man.
Yeah.
And therefore makes us largely irrelevant.
But also, I think, before, because I think this sort of thing has its genesis in kind of Victorian horror stories. And Christianity and kind of science and so on. So these horrors come before Christianity.
Yeah.
So I think there's a sort of, we're always quite scared
and
of
often
pagans
with
and pagan
point.
Rituals and all that.
Oh, the huddy-guddy.
But it's very much a British version of Lovecraft, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's a, it's a middle-class version of Lovecraft, isn't
it? That's true.
So, we get now to the point where we introduce little Tommy Atkins.
Man with a moustache.
Man with a moustache. Another Carpenter trope.
Yeah.
This is a little bit troubling, actually, because the hero of the film, it just has this sort of horrible relationship with his wife.
Yeah.
But loves his kids and all that sort of thing.
His wife played by the woman who is brilliant in The Fog.
Oh, yes. What do you call her? Janet
Leigh's psychic.
Oh, she is brilliant in the Fog.
There's a lot of Carpenter alumni here, actually.
Yeah,
isn't
absolutely. Moustaches, mostly.
But even he is an actor, though. It's funny. He's one of those guys that everybody knows him. Like, your mum would know him.
Yeah,
your aunties know him. Your kids would know him. But nobody can quite name him.
No,
and
totally.
Yet he's been in everything.
Yeah.
Hawaii 5-0 he's in sometimes and things like that.
But the thing is, Carpenter has that thing where he then changes for a younger model with a bushy moustache in Prince of Darkness.
Yeah, it's the guy from Simon and Simon.
Yeah, who's got the same moustache and hair, but is just younger.
Yeah.
But you know what directors do, though? They always pick an idealised version of themselves.
Yeah.
You know,
I think you made mention
like Chris Nolan and DiCaprio and all that. You know, they just get a slightly better looking version of themselves, and then when that guy gets too old, they bring in when they start to look like them. You know,
we'll get to
DiCaprio does look like Christopher Nolan.
If you look at anybody who's got a long standing relationship, I mean, think of even Scorsese and De Niro. They've got that kind of Italian New York thing and all that. And, you know, he's kind of, De Niro's probably what inside Martin Scorsese would kind of love to be. You know, he's a kind of cool version of Scorsese. They've got a lot of similar interests in it. But most of the actors do that. They've always got somebody they keep bringing back who reminds them of themselves. You know.
Yeah, I can see that.
Dreyfus for Spielberg. And Spielberg's heyday. It was Dreyfus.
Yeah. Who didn't want to do Jaws originally.
Really?
They approached Dreyfus to do it. But at the time when he'd started to, you know, think about making it, whatever, he had just done, well, he was massive because he had done...
Well, the apprenticeship of
the
Dirty
Goodbye Girl.
The Goodbye Girl. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think he'd...
The film came after Jaws, though.
Well, I can't remember.
He must have done it on Broadway.
Whatever it was, he was a big, he was big. And so they're going after him. He said no because, as he said, that... Sorry,
I'll get to this.
Because he'd said it was he wanted to see it rather than be in it.
Right.
And then by the time they got to pre-production,
yeah.
he had no work and he was skint. And then he wanted to do it. So he did it.
I never knew that.
Jack, you have something coming in.
It's coming in off the bios. First of all, were we talking about Omen 2 earlier on?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Because George White said that Omen 2 made a mistake in killing off McKern. He should have been a Van Helsing figure. Craig.
yeah, that's probably true.
But he had a great death.
He does. It's a death that everyone remembers. Yeah,
I think he deserved to die.
That's a good observation, though. I think that's actually that's quite interesting. Because what goes wrong in Omen 3 is that you need some payoff from the earlier ones. Like if he'd been the guy that carried through those films, I would have felt a bit more connected. Because I remember Omen 3, I couldn't wait for me. That was like a Star Wars film. And finally getting to see that, and I had to wait till it was out on video because I was too young to go and see it in the cinema. But that payoff was just so unsatisfying, wasn't it?
I didn't see it until it was on the telly. I watched it in this very room.
Nazarene.
Yeah, there's a terrible bit at the end of Omen 3 where Sam Neill, when he's just in one of the daggers off his arse, says, you know, when the thing appears and he says, Nazarene, you have won nothing. You kind of want the big sort of Christ figure to go, no, I've actually won.
That's me.
You be dead means I have literally won.
I am Jesus. And I am,
look at me fly.
And I'm really angry about that business 2,000 years ago. So if you think this is a happy ending, folks, you're fucking kidding yourselves.
There's nice bits in Omen 3, though.
The setup's really great, isn't it? And he's fantastic.
There's some nice wee sequences, though. There's a bit where they're in the old...
the scary animal bum raid.
But there's the monastery. There's the monastery bit where they get stuck in the... they get stuck in the grate at the end and all that sort of thing.
Ruby Wax is in it.
She's the ambassador secretary.
You know the guy who blows his head off?
And actually, one of the most frightening bits in it is just the bit at the start with the ambassador looking in the mirror. It's really freaky.
Yeah.
But there's not an awful lot.
But he's a great Antichrist, though. I think
he's very good.
He ups the IQ by 30 points.
It's got some nice bits in it. And there's a lot of nice London at the time. It's not the Hellmouth it is now.
Another tweet. Would Mark be interested in licensing out my superhero Meteor Man, who I created when I was 8? He's like Superman, but with amulets. And there is the picture.
I think I'm actually...
Instead
of licensing it, I'm going to steal it.
Okay.
And make money off it and give him nothing.
Who's that from?
Is that Graham? Yeah.
It says Robert Kirkman there. Fuck off, Robert.
No, I think that's a suggestion of who we can follow.
The Walking Dead's all the
shit,
isn't
it, Mark? That's horrible.
Right, we have to at some point talk about this film.
Oh my God, that was really disturbing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, they're in the town. The thing is, it's in the town. Everybody in the wee town works for Silver Shamrock. There's nobody really around. They're all Irish. Mm-hmm. Like, bog Irish.
It's like Coat Ridge, then.
Well, it's like the next town's like Airdrie. And then these guys turn up and just kill people if they get in the wrong way and whatever. And they're a wee bit weird and you don't know what's going on.
I've got to say, though, I disagree that I think it's a good idea to, in the middle of a franchise, do a whole new story with your character.
Well,
though? Because see, just as a wee guy, like, I'd seen the first Halloween, so I was expecting Michael Myers, and I was really disappointed.
Well, that
and it's a bit like going to see Superman 3 and just seeing it like Crossroads or something like that, isn't it? But we're going to do a whole new thing where it's set in a motel.
But it raises an interesting question.
How did Kick-Ass 2 do?
Angus Lane was in it. It raises an interesting question, which is, would it have done better if it were just called Season of the Witch
and had
no branding to do with Halloween at all?
It would have been probably better received.
That was great, doesn't it? That looks like classic Carpenter, that.
Yeah. Now, Tom Atkins is a doctor, by the way, if you can...
Oh, watch this.
You can swallow that.
Oh, yeah.
There, and he's killed himself.
That's quite a good death.
You all right,
because
mate?
That's because somebody's escaped the town, they're in the hospital, they've come in and killed them, and he's like, where the fuck? So we've got to get the bottom of this. Me and my moustache is twitching.
If he's a really good doctor, he's going to make sure he's okay now.
Code Blue.
So which Carpenter films is he in? He's in The Fog.
The Fog.
He's in The Fog.
He's in Escape from New York.
Yeah.
Yes, he is at the very start.
Yes. And then he gets replaced by the guy from Simon and Simon.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is he not in Ghosts of Mars as well? I could be wrong.
I think you might be right, actually. I've only seen it the once. My son was asking me today because my son has become a John Carpenter obsessive.
He's
Robert,
convinced
Robert Doohan just standing in the corner.
Is that not, what's his name, Michael Redmond?
The Irish comedian.
Father Stone.
He just cuts about in the West End.
He does, yeah. He was told he was going to get the job for the main part. I grew this moustache. Go on, let me be in it.
But do you remember what sequels used to be like, though, in the past? Which was, sequels were always remakes of the other film. Like,
that's my idea of what a proper sequel should be.
Well, that's the thing. It's funny because James Bond even is that. Yeah. They're all remakes of North by Northwest, aren't they? You know, so I mean, they've got that same template running through everything.
Sure.
Halloween's got it. You know, you've got it in Friday the 13th. Jaws. It's the same thing over and over again.
Well, yeah.
But Star Wars kind of changed it slightly by they waited till the third film before they remade the first one.
Yeah.
You know, they actually added new material.
But I see. I have a theory about this, which is that you can't consider until the prequels come along.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can consider Star Wars a franchise.
Nope.
Yeah, because up until then, it's like it was always planned as like a films in three parts. It's a serial.
Mm-hmm.
A franchise is a different thing. Mm-hmm. It's a series of films based on the same premise. I don't think there was a proper modern franchise until Star Trek II.
That's interesting.
Because I mean, it's different now. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is now a franchise, yeah. But at the time, it was always going to be three films.
Yeah.
If they made the money. And then that's it.
Yeah.
A franchise, you would just keep banging them out every couple of years.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think it counts as a franchise in the first instance. But I think, leaving Bond aside, because it started out simply as an adaptation of a series of books, the first proper film franchise, in my view, was as soon as they made Wrath of Khan. Mm. And then they just start turning out films, same characters, same premise, different adventures every time. And then that's the first proper film.
I guess
franchise.
Superman 2 would be the same. What came first out of Wrath of Khan? I think Superman 2 might be just before it, was it?
Yeah, 1981.
Yeah.
But filmed back to back, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
That's interesting, yeah.
So now they're having.
I thought I saw Dabney Coleman, by the way, a second ago.
Oh, Sir Dabney
Coleman.
Was it him? No. I think it might have been.
I don't think so. I'm sure I'd have noticed Sir Dabney Coleman.
There's quite an interestingly distasteful relationship between her and little Tommy Atkins in this film.
Yeah, it doesn't take very long
for her to be disrobing. Yeah. But it's interesting because you know who she is? I only found this out quite recently. I can't remember her name. You're aware that Woody Allen is a man with an interesting love life history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she had a relationship with Woody Allen in the 70s when she was about 16.
Mm-hmm.
And so she therefore is the inspiration for the Mario Hemingway character in Manhattan.
That's amazing.
And I think she subsequently suggested, she was very young when they started getting together, like 16, 17 or something.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting some feedback.
What about Tarzan or Sherlock? Or Charlie Chan.
Modern film franchises, I think I said.
Okay. And so what's the distinction? Is it just an
era thing? There's a difference between you know, a studio cranking out, you know, six Charlie Chan films in a year and an actual, you know, franchise. That might be a semantic point, but it's my point of view.
That's interesting because I wonder if a lot of those movies were made, and if they made enough money, they quickly made another one, wasn't it? As opposed to having a plan.
There was also a question of a sort of economy of scale in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is, you have the set, you have the characters, you have them all. They're all contract players. You're banging them out, you know, one every few months for actually not very much. You want to do it in London, there's a bit of fog.
Yeah.
You know, actually, do you want to do it in San Francisco, there's a bit of fog. You know, that's a completely different thing. And the Basil Rathbone, Sherlock.
How many does he do? I saw them all out of sequences as a kid.
I have no idea.
They must have been all filmed pretty close together.
What's the one with the guy standing against the moon? And he's wearing a sort of reflective suit. That scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. Yeah. George will know. George. One of the Basil Rathbone Sherlock films, there's a sequence at one bloke when they're looking for someone out in the moors or something, and the person turns out, it's an optical illusion, to be standing up against the moon, and he's wearing a sort of reflective suit.
Oh, there you go.
So I like the one film that was.
Yeah.
Okay, George.
I like when they started fighting the Nazis and things like that. I love those films. Part of the Cream Guy Films manifesto that when they stopped showing these things on like BBC Two and weekdays and then school holidays in the morning, when they stopped doing that, society went to hell.
Yeah. Do you know that's a good point?
Yeah.
I think so, intelligence dropped.
No more synthesis between generations, no more shared cultural reference points.
We talk about this a lot. We talked about this on our commentary before.
It's cable TV, isn't it?
In the 1980s.
Those choices.
Absolutely. Yeah. But once upon a time, we all understood the same thing. In the 1980s, we'd watch the Russ Abbott show, and we understood what SPIVs were. Mm.
Yeah.
People wouldn't they?
Yeah, and there was a sort of no coward takeoff, I'm honest with that. Do you know what, when you started talking about Woody Allen, the sound get really good? Hiya, Woody. Hiya, pal.
That was his lawyers listening in.
Do you know what's funny? Atkins is the least convincing medic I think I've ever seen. He looks more like a lumberjack. He's more like a lumberjack, isn't he?
Well, excuse me. It's like when he's in the fog, you believe that he's
a fisherman. You believe that,
He's a wee bit... He's a bit too blue-collar, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a bit like Doug McClure in that mutant film that we watched. Remember the humanoids
what was
from
that?
The deep?
Mutants from the deep. Humanoids from the deep.
Yeah, it's a good film, that, yeah.
film. We love that.
I seen that one? I saw that in the cinema. Actually.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah. We really enjoyed that.
There's a bit of sort of... mutant raping in it, which isn't so nice, but it's a good film.
It's funny, those Doug McClure films, though, to me, felt as big as Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you still paid a pound to go and see it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it felt like that they were major movies. I never got the joke in Simpsons where they were sort of taking the mickey out of him. I thought, no, he's a major star.
Well, the other thing is, when they used to do seasons of films, when that sort of thing happened, you know, and they would do seasons of, like, dinosaur films or fantasy films, so it would always be, like... The Land of Time Forgotten, all that. You think, all right, the Valley of the Grangi, Land of Time Forgotten, perfectly, you know, equitable series of films. Sci-fi films the same until
made by
Amicus, fucking 2001.
Do you know, it's been a long time since I've seen on BBC something like that. You know, like six good movies over the course of a week. That's how I discovered Godzilla.
Absolutely.
I always think, I actually got my film education basically by watching the BBC and watching films.
Yeah, because you would do you would stick out a season, you know, like Tuesday night they do, you know, like science fiction films, or Saturday night they would do. I mean, actually, probably the last time they did that were things like Videodrome.
Yeah,
where there were no connection between them except that they were meant to be interesting films. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd be lucky if you got
Movie Drum,
a bigger part. You get like two or three in a row that were like really good, and then they put on fucking Repo Man or something.
But it was
except
quite...
then they would have.
I'm talking about Alex Cox.
This is an amazing piece of cinema.
Not Mark Cousins talking about the film. Jeez, you can fuck off.
It's anyway. Like very ghettoising, though, all that, don't you think?
Well, you know, I mean...
What, to have a genre?
Contextualised by Alex Cox or Mark Cousins.
Alex Cox in Movie Drum showed the greatest horror film of all time.
Which is?
Dead of Night.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say The Wicker Man.
Up your hole.
Boom.
What's happening in the internet, Jack?
Well, your typical sci-fi season.
Going bad again.
Your typical sci-fi season should be a load of 50s and 60s George Powell Universal Harryhausen.
It used to be. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our house, that stuff runs all the time. Yeah. I see Harryhausen in our house constantly. Okay. Not me personally, but.
I saw Harryhausen at the GFT.
Did he move like that?
No, you were there as well.
Yeah, I know.
That would be a great gag if he came on like that, wouldn't it? Everybody
was. He was there. He had the model, the original model for the Medusa from Clash of the Titans, and he had a couple of the wee skeletons from Jason the Argonauts. And it was great.
It's amazing.
And the great thing about it was people inevitably asked about CGI. And he started off with a really good measured response about how CGI has its place. You know, there's only so much you can do with stop motion or even go motion. CGI can enhance it. And by the time he finished his answer 5 minutes later, it's a pile of shit made by people with no fucking artistic talent whatsoever.
And of course he was childhood friends with Ray Bradbury.
That's right.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know
they were friends.
I did not know.
In their teens, I think. Yeah.
Now, can I pick up something we mentioned earlier on? Can we talk a bit about Nigel Neal again? Is that right?
Go for it.
Okay, I'm going to run these by you. So, earlier today we posted this. Can you finish this sentence? The best Nigel Neal moment was... So, if anybody... I'll read these out, and if you want to react to them, you do that. Okay, the best Nigel Neal moment was... What I want for Christmas is please go away.
Oh, very good, yeah.
Or as I quoted after.
That's from the Stone Tape.
And a shoot annual.
Yeah, that is. Have you seen the Stone Tape, Mark?
No, I haven't seen it. No.
Oh,
no.
That's brilliant. Fantastic.
I'll be over there if you like.
Best Nigel Neal moment, Remembrance of the Daleks.
Ooh.
Is quite
why is that a Nigel Neal moment?
Rip-off. It's a big Nigel Neal rip-off, and there's a reference to...
Because he loved Doctor Who, didn't he?
As well. Oh, he hated Doctor
Who. I know, I was fantastic.
What was he from? What was the...
It frightened children, and I think that's reprehensible.
He's got a point. That's true, isn't he? You know?
He's just a knobs, old bastard. Yeah.
The best Nigel Neal moment is More Tommy. Does anybody know where that's from?
More Tommy?
More Tommy.
That's from...
it's the best dolphin
He didn't write The Boys in Blue, did he?
I think, isn't that not the thing about the dolphin?
No, it's the Final Quatermass.
Oh, right,
More
okay.
Tommy. The best call for exposition ever, apparently.
Are these all from the same person, by any chance? No,
quite a few different people. The best Nigel Neal moment ever is Stop Trying to Know Things. You know what that is?
Nope.
No.
We don't know.
No, we don't know.
Can I give you mine?
That was
it's the ending of Baby from Beasts.
Is it? Oh,
right, which scares the living shit out of me.
What's that from? I'm showing the panel.
I can't see it from here.
Gareth Roberts is...
I think it's the best.
I can't
really see that properly.
Yeah.
See
what is
that?
It's a
couple
of
witches,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't recognise that.
I don't
recognise
that.
Has he given a clue?
No, he's given us nothing. So, oh, it's Fault in Storage who's done that. So, whoever he is, if he's listening, he should tell us. The Stone Tape, still astonishing. The best Nigel Neal moment is... Neil developed Kinvig after going to science fiction convention in Brighton and meeting fans close up. He later recounted they were the craziest lot of people I'd ever encountered. They were dreadful. The whole thing consisted of just dancing about in masks, giggling and having too much to drink. I was just disgusted.
We can't deny this.
From there, he thought two science fiction obsessed men would be good for laughs, to laugh at, that is, and created Des and Jim. If they believed everything they read about UFOs, then it would be easy for them to enter into fantasy about a beautiful alien female.
It's funny, wow. I watched Kinvig for the first time about a month ago.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
For the first time since it was screened.
28 Gaff's finest hour.
I saw it. What year would that be? Like 79 or something?
Right? Oh, no, it wasn't as early as that.
It was a wee bit later. And I remember actually watching it at the time.
Sort of mid-80s.
And I didn't quite get it at the time. And even then, 30-odd years later, there's still no laughs. There's not a lot of laughs in Kinvig.
I've never seen it.
I don't remember ever finding it particularly funny.
But it was a sitcom, though, wasn't it? It was
well, yeah, yeah, but because it was sort of sci-fi, it seemed incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
I remember, what would that be? 82, 3, 4, something like that. 22. I remember, you know, ITV's big autumn season.
Yeah.
There was a clip for Kinvig and just thinking, that looks fucking immense. And I don't remember anything about it, except... where they drink the stuff, he drinks the stuff at the start.
Well, what I always remember is the ads for it, and the ads was that kind of thing, like, here's our great new comedy, you love Rise and Damp, check out Kinvig, you know, and it's like, you hold on to your sides,
boys.
They might just
wait till Kinvig hits you.
The best Nigel Neal moment was that short story with the frogs. I don't know what that is. Anyone know what that is?
No idea.
by comments by
George White, who says Santa Mira, which is the town this is set in, looks like some Irish towns. There's places in Wicklow that look like that.
Mm.
Well, I'm not qualified to comment on that.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
And he asks, "What is the worst portrayal of Ireland, Scotland, England? Clearly not filmed in Britain that you've ever seen." Which is a good question.
I kind of love stuff like that when they get it wrong. It's nice, isn't it?
I suppose the most famous one must be Brigadoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which they came and did the scope locations for and decided Scotland didn't look Scottish enough, so they did it in. Burbank, actually.
I guess Braveheart was an island as well.
Yeah.
What about parts of The Conjuring 2?
Oh, my God.
Have you seen The Conjuring 2?
I haven't watched it yet, no.
There's a massive basin in council houses.
Conjuring 2, I loved The Conjuring.
Yeah, it was great, yeah.
It is, like, you'll love this as a checklist, right? So it's amended by the Enfield Port, I guess. Mm-hmm. 1977. What's wrong with some of this? Council house... Right, mm-hmm. Central heating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Immediately there you are.
Right. Yeah.
Basement.
Mm-hmm. Like basement. A big proper American basement.
Giant American
with like someone with hitting the heater going, oh my God, look at this.
A washing machine in the basement.
Yeah. That's amazing, I love
right.
that.
She's sitting at home, home from school, watching the telly in the afternoon with a remote control.
Yeah.
That only works if Roy Hudd is presenting the programme. Pipkins has just finished.
Oh, it's Roy Hudd's coming up. Familiar.
They saw it coming up in a man with Pipkins.
Jack, you're unplugging stuff. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah,
do you think, you know the way there was a charm to being off school when you were sick? When you were
until you were actually off
school. If you were actually seriously ill, it wasn't. It was good. But if you were kind of, if you had the flu or something like that and you were off and you're sitting watching that afternoon shows, Because it was shows unlike anything you saw in the evening, yeah. wasn't it? Because it was stuff aimed at pensioners. Because the only people who were in the house back then were sick kids and pensioners.
Bizarre with Nira Shoes.
And ghosts.
Yeah. Ghosts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's my house.
Pensioner.
Get out of my house.
Conjuring too.
My house.
You're right, pal. Look at the fucking plaster.
Yeah. George is saying, Bedknobs and Broomsticks looks genuinely like Dorset, but was actually shot in the US.
Mm. The matte work is superb. Now, Bedknobs and Broomsticks are Disney film I only have saw on like video at when it came out in the 80s. I've never watched it since.
Right.
And is it any good?
It's quite good, yeah.
It's funny, it's one of those films that, you know, the way kids sit and watch Disney films over and over and over again?
Yeah.
There was that wee period where Disney was kind of on the ropes a bit, wasn't it? It wasn't doing that well.
Yeah.
And those films, weirdly, aren't as fondly remembered either. You know, like the way people love Jungle Book and they love Cinderella and all that. Like,
I think I mentioned this before. It's like there was a period where...
About Condor Man.
Yeah, because they made a conscious policy decision to stop making animated films.
Right.
The last one they were going to make was going to be The Black Cauldron.
Wow.
And actually The Black Cauldron's fine, you know, but then they were just going to make the live action films, but then they came back, they made Beauty and the Beast and it went fucking mental, first animated film to get an Oscar nomination.
That wee period, that Disney Renaissance is so good. I mean, I didn't see a lot of that stuff at the time because I was a teenager, but things like Little Mermaids, Aladdin, they are amazing.
Aladdin, you weren't
a fucking teenager then.
That's
the mid-90s.
Oh, right. No, hang on. Yeah, I was way too old then. Because it'd be too embarrassing.
I was a university when
I
went to college.
I think Little Mermaid, I was 15, I think. You don't like Disney?
No.
Really? Yeah.
No,
I'm a big Disney fan.
But you've never seen Aladdin?
No.
The two best films this year were Disney.
You don't have a basis to comment then.
No, I have. I've seen other Disney films.
Why don't you like Disney?
They never really appealed to me very much. I kind of, you know, when I was about six, Star Wars came out, and everything like Disney had made until then, and probably since then, always looked a bit shite in comparison.
Have you seen a little movie called The Black Hole?
Yeah,
The Black Hole. I like The Black
Hole,
yeah.
I saw that in the pictures.
So did I. I'm disappointed.
Did you not have the same... they used to do the jokes about audiences that would come out of Braveheart, that we all be coming out screaming, going, freedom. If you filmed an audience come out The Black Hole, it'd just be people going... What was that all about?
Not even light can escape it. It's the bleakest concept.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Why was he in that? Why was Maximilian Schell in the robot suit? Are they dead? What?
Yeah.
I do love it though. I do love the black.
But this year the two best movies were
John Barry's
Zootropolis, amazing. Zootropolis is the film of the year.
I've been told it's great.
It's fantastic. And Jungle Book was very good too.
Against all the odds, it was a very good film.
I preferred Spotlight. That was a much better film.
Oh, sorry.
It was.
Because I liked both.
I know, but I'm just saying, I didn't like, I've not seen them, but I liked Spotlight.
Do you go for the more grounded realism?
Not necessarily. Fox related. This afternoon, I went to see Doctor Strange. I thought it was fantastic.
I enjoyed Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I see the other night. That was great. Yeah. Really, really good.
I can't believe we live in a world. Well, there's a Doctor Strange movie, and it's not even like a cheap TV movie. Somebody spent $200 million, which is actually quite good, and it's got the mum from Arrested Development as the baddie. She's playing Morgan Le Fay. But like a Doctor Strange movie, I mean, I wouldn't even have imagined we'd get a Spider-Man film. You know, when I was a kid, you just think we'd get a TV series if we're lucky, you know. But the idea of a Doctor Strange film, you just feel anything can happen now. When the minute Blades happened, you thought, right, we can get anyone now.
No,
the most C-list characters. You know?
Sorry to interrupt the flow. But we do need to talk about this.
Of course.
Well, we talked about Nigel Mill.
So now they've arrived. They're actually in the town now.
It seems to be in the Curse of Fenric now. It's cutting about between these.
Well, actually, it looks
like a World War II base.
It looks a wee bit like the space station in one of my other favourite films, which is Battle Beyond the Stars.
Mm.
Two more days to Halloween. So this is him cutting about in the town. It really, to be honest, in terms of what it only really kicks in, because this is a bit mysterious, when the great Dan O'Herlihy, the Olivier of the B-movie, puts in appearance.
Yeah.
Because he is tremendous in this.
He's one of those Irish-American guys who's actually Irish.
That's right,
isn't he? Because he was born in Ireland.
No, absolutely.
As is his son, the great Gavin.
The great O'Herlihy. Gavin O'Herlihy,
Is that, I never even twigged.
That's his body. Yeah, that's his son, Superman 3.
Yeah, amazing.
And Descent 2, which I saw him in recently, which is he's quite old in it, but he still looks Still looks good.
He's no, great. He's good Superman actor. 3.
He brought a bit of gravitas to Superman 3.
I love Superman 3.
Are you serious?
Yeah, no. We've done a commentary on it.
Yes.
Superman 3, I think, is one of the most difficult experiences of my life. The thing that was so
hard. I
could
find that very hard to look what's going on here.
Oh, right. Okay, this is when he
just pulled that from his head. Donald Trump just pulled that man's head off.
That looks like Simon Pegg, doesn't it?
It does look a bit like Simon Pegg, yeah.
Oh. It's a bit like Mr. Campbell, a guy who used to own a bed and breakfast in Millport. I wonder what they did off-season.
It is.
Bang the wee gong. Saturday night, it must be sausage and onion.
So yes. Was Superman 3 talked about kindly then by you guys
yeah,
in the podcast?
I like Superman.
Really, yeah. What age were you when you saw it?
Well, I saw it, the pictures.
What
age was it?
12?
I must have been about
1983.
You're a couple of years older than me, aren't you?
Yeah, I was 13 when it came out. You're young enough to maybe just enjoy seeing the jokes and Superman and all that. Because for me, Superman was a very earnest thing, you know. So the idea of bringing
totally, yeah.
that Benny
yeah.
Hill comedy stuff with Bob Todd and all
oh,
that.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I love it. No, we
see,
did,
I mostly
to be fair,
think that Superman's a lot of shit.
Oh, see, Superman means everything.
Except
me,
for that really good one when he becomes a Soviet. That's good. I like
I
that
don't,
one.
We did make it clear, I think, in the commentary for anybody who actually listens to these fucking things. That,
we did then.
There is a massive disconnect. The stuff with the early, you know, all the Benny Hill stuff at the
yeah.
start is done brilliantly, but it shouldn't,
it should
be
in
that
film. It's been in Star Wars?
Yeah.
Like, what's Bob Todd doing here?
Yeah, no, well, Bob Todd should be in Star Wars.
He should be in everything, though. I mean,
if Johnny Briggs' dad
that,
could
if
be
Johnny
in Star
Briggs,
Wars.
Can you imagine a Bob Todd and wee Jackie, the wee Baldy, at that table?
That would have been brilliant.
Darth Vader just walking past like...
They'd have been great, actually, the C-3PO and R2-D2, if you think about it.
Oh, Bob Todd and Jacket. Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Grand Moff Tarkin. Hello, new viewers. Grand Moff Tarkin here.
Oh, the stormtroopers, have they picked you up by the fans? No, they just tapped the show. Here's that. But this brings us. Oh, it's covering so many points here.
Oh, hello.
The new trailer for.
Jeez,
That's some proper nudity. Here.
Well, what's proper nudity? Sorry.
What the fuck's it
the
called?
The heterosexuals are looking at the female nudity. There was proper poop and there was proper blow parts as well.
Rogue One.
Right.
The trailer for Rogue One.
Yeah.
Are they just keeping Peter Cushing as a big reveal? As a big bit at the end of it just for
us? No, isn't that who Ben Mendelsohn's playing?
No.
Oh, no, he's playing his own character.
He's not playing Tarkin.
He's from the novels.
There was a thing that was out a wee while ago.
But how would
that
they have
said
a minute? Because he is dead.
There was a thing, a story that came out, whether it's true or not, I don't know. You don't know, you never know, because it's on the fucking internet. That they were scouring films, Peter Cushing films, to try and find enough frames that they could put together a sequence of them.
Oh, really?
So that right at the very end, I presume... when it's commissioned and it's all ready and all that sort of thing, he'll appear.
Right.
I hope it's from Dracula. I hope they just get it slightly
well,
wrong.
I'm hoping it's from, like, fucking Biggles or something.
That's
Blood
a film
Beach
I quite like, actually,
oh,
as
I
love well.
I
really
when
like
I saw
Biggles,
it at the time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great film.
It was funny, you know, when they were sort of trying to find what's the iconic characters that kids are going to love, and it took about 15 years, didn't it? Like, after Superman and everything, and then you got Tim Burton's Batman, but there was a lot of rubbish. Mm. In there as well, where they were trying Dick Tracy and Rocketeer and all that stuff.
It didn't help that...
Rocketeer's
the Rocker. The Rocker who?
Why?
The... Rocketeer joke.
That's good.
You
can tell it's a film of its time now. Look at that. You're seeing a woman in her undies.
It's funny horror films.
Get away from it, you dirty
with pubic
hair. He's got his big plucky back. He's got stretch marks.
The horror film sex scene is something that's disappeared, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd say the last 15 years or so, the horror film sex scene's gone.
But... yeah, Biggles wasn't helped by the fact that I had no idea who Biggles was.
Oh, really?
I'd never read any of the books.
Right.
It just didn't mean anything.
I used to get them at the library but not read them.
Yeah.
I
having them around. You.
I think that was our first sex scene in a commentary.
Catechism.
we just talked through
just
our first Kring Dag Films commentary sex scene.
Yeah. Here's a question, though. Why did the sex scene stop in films?
Because you're not allowed to make grown-up films anymore.
Can't let you keep talking over it.
You can't make grown-up films anymore.
No, you're not allowed to, no.
Do you think that's what
it is?
Well,
America's become enormously puritanical.
Well, it's not just that. It is that, but it's also... they wouldn't accept it in China.
But I'm talking even go back 20 years.
Oh,
basic
no, absolutely.
Those sex murder mystery things, they finished in 1995.
Yeah, but that was when people used to be grown up. or they would presume that people
I've got a theory about this.
And now it's like you can't make films that might.
Can't make films that
even the merest possibility may be offensive.
I think it's because when you're a wee guy, when you're 13, and your mum's out, and you get her video cards, and you go and get a horror film, it's
What are you going to tell?
You're getting 40 seconds of pornography.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
so as close to pornography as you've ever seen, right? So you, when you're 13, this is amazing, right? But now, we guys have got access to free porn, so yeah, I don't think they bother. So I don't think they need to throw that in.
But I think there is also a real puritanical streak about it all. That
let me introduce you to a little thing called the internet.
You know, oh, no, but it's a massive double standard. It's the same reason that you.
But do you not think it's balanced now that the kids just go straight to it? They don't want to see somebody get out of shower anymore.
Never occurred to me before. Oh no, Hendon!
Don't pick that up.
That's a great 80s carpet there.
What we know is, she'd come to the town as a buyer, well, she was a buyer, she had a shop that sold the masks, but she'd come to complain. Now, watch this bad boy.
Wow.
And these are the little badges that are on the back of all the masks. Oh, don't do it, don't fuck about it.
Imagine you're going to see Halloween 1 and 2, though, and you're like, right, when's Michael Myers going to jump out and kill
these?
That's
pretty much what happened.
Holy shit!
That's pretty good, isn't it? Let's
see what happens.
What's that? I don't remember.
That's
this
movie.
Who cares?
Are you alright, Ian?
Oh, I think she was looking a wee bit like Gladys Pugh before this went wrong.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
That's not right.
That's hot. That's going to hurt in the morning as well.
Yeah. Get some Savlon on that.
It's okay, he's a doctor. That'll be fine. They're just making this up as they're going along.
Can I
do a callback?
Yes.
Stop Trying to Know Things was one of the ones that we didn't know from the National Post. Apparently it's from Quatermass 79. A planet person shouts it.
Is that from the Quatermass conclusion?
Yeah.
Puffle-dy, puffle-dy, ring-stone round. Dana Herlihy says, George... was in the dead.
Oh, this Tommy Atkins.
Male nudity. This is getting out of control.
Was in the dead. Remember the John Huston? Is that John Huston's last film?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Angelica Huston, who's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Irish Cant set in Dublin and Judith Huston's Ellen set.
I watched the John Huston film tonight before I came here.
Literally
switched it off and got in the science scene and came here.
What did you watch?
Annie.
Really? Yeah, I saw that in the pictures.
I've never seen it. I watch it all the time.
You told us that before.
I'd never seen it until just a few months ago, and now the kids are obsessed with it. So we have it on.
That's a long
It's
film.
On there with Sinbad and I the Tiger and all that. It's on a loop in our house. It's just it's playing a lot. And it actually makes me almost cry every time I watch it. It's so good. And I dismissed it for years, but it's a masterpiece.
The film that the annoying old Won't Rewind a Video woman is playing in Serial Mom. When Kathleen Turner comes in and beats her to death with a leg of lamb.
Wow. You've actually now done a shout out to a film that I was thinking about this on my way over here tonight, and I'll tell you for why. I was thinking about that I like, because I've been seeing Doctor Strange. This is how it went in my head.
Right.
I like Doctor Strange.
There he is,
Dan O'Hurley.
Yes.
So I like Benedict Cumberbatch, and I don't understand why anyone can't like
him. I think he's great. A big guy.
And I was thinking I also like Tom Hiddleston, but who I don't like is Eddie Redmayne. Who's a posh or too far?
He's a bit irritating.
And I was then thinking that I hated that bloody film that I saw him in about Stephen Hawking. However, Jane Hawking in it was played by the woman that's in Rogue One. And I was thinking that my friend Amy, hello Amy, walked out of the Stephen Hawking film because she just thought it was shit.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, what film have I ever walked out in my entire life?
Hollywood Homicide?
No, I've only walked out in one film when I was a kid. And it was a double bill of films. And does any of you else remember this? Released together as a double bill in the late 70s was Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger and Spider-Man the Movie.
I write about this about once a month online. Which one did I walk out of? I would get Spider-Man.
Yes, and that was the one we went to see. And my brother and I said, this is shite, but we'd loved Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger.
Everything in the universe has got an equal opposite. I've got the opposite of that story.
You've got Martin Connor.
But I love
that. Hi, Martin.
I loved that, still here living your life. I loved that double bell so much that I talked my mum into staying in and watching two movies over again. So we watched four movies in one go. And I was utterly obsessed with both films, and I still am. They're like two of my favourite films.
I thought
Spider-Man's kind of rubbish, but it was seeing Spider-Man on the screen, and that was enough to kind of be
excited. I was desperate for that, yeah. Some of them have tigers, great.
I've never walked out of a film in the pictures. The only film I've come close to walking out on was AI.
We walked out the last 10 minutes, it's so weird to say
it was just so interminable. Yeah. I went to see it with our Emma. Hiya, Paul. And the only reason that we didn't was because there was a guy sitting in front of us on his phone, and he was texting.
Right.
And it was really annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the last half hour of the film, we were just following his text conversation. And we needed a bit of closure on it. Otherwise, we would have left. By the end of it, almost everybody in the hall had walked out.
I saw that at the opening night of the Ministry of Cinema in town. The big cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed, and you got to pick which one you went to see. And we got invited, so went to see AI. And our chum Alan Brown walked out of it. He got up and said, I'm
Do you know, that film's been reassessed, and it annoys me that it's been reassessed. That some people say, no. Yeah. A lot of people are saying it's a better film than you think.
Oh, fuck
it's
off.
One of those, and well, it's not, arsehole, it's a really bad
that
film.
That arsehole Kermode likes it.
For it to be a better film than I thought, it would just have to be fucking awful.
Because I'm in the ground looking at
rock bottom when I think about it.
When was Spielberg's last good movie, though? You're talking to us.
Spielberg's last good movie, Lincoln.
Bridge of Spies.
We talked about this the other week.
Lincoln's a great film.
I get 10 minutes into one, 15 minutes into
one. No, I love Lincoln.
I like them.
Loved Lincoln. But that was, his last decent film was Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I like Catch Me If You Can, but it's a good TV movie. I mean, anybody could have made that film.
Saving Private Ryan's quite a good film.
Yeah.
Well, it's three different films. And he ruins it at the end.
I have a conversation topic.
Go for it.
Social media.
Following on
from your book chat earlier on.
Did we do book chat?
Yeah, apparently. Any remembrances about favourite book covers you'd love looking at in school?
Who's asking that?
What was your book chat?
Who's asking that?
Graham.
Why did we talk about books?
Going
to remind me.
When did we talk about books?
Anyway, favourite book covers.
Favourite book cover?
Favourite.
Got to be 70s sci-fi covers, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because everything else is now just
I follow all that stuff on Twitter. Yeah.
You might remember this, because you know more about these things than me. I had, somebody gave me a compilation, because I didn't read horror, I didn't watch horror films much. It was a compilation of horror short stories, and the front cover was one of those really glossy photographs. And it was an egg cracked open, and it was an eyeball.
Yeah, that would be one of the Panbico, the Fontana Book of Horrors.
Yeah, it would probably.
Yeah.
And that sticks in my mind.
I think it's difficult to see beyond the science fiction anthology books.
Yeah.
I went and bought...
I never read them. Just like
a couple of years ago on the internet.
I
had them for so... These scenes are great, by the way, with these couple who are... They remind me of the couple that win the bingo in Superman.
Absolutely. And I'm not hearing a word about against that whole... Is it Jingle Bingo?
Jingle Bingo.
All the stuff in the newsroom with the Jingle Bingo and all that is fucking brilliant.
Superman 3 makes me worried the terrorists are right.
But... But the problem in Superman 3, as Craig went on at length about it quite rightly, was it ludicrously underuses Margot Kidder.
She fell out with the guys. She fell out with the producers. They fired Richard Donner. The revenge was to not use her in Superman 3.
We saw her at the
How's she looking?
Oh, bless her heart.
Really?
It's a real shame.
I've always loved Margot Kidder.
Yeah.
She looked like, you know, in Indiana Jones and his dad with Julian Glover. Sort of in the middle of that.
I loved her too. We talked about this at some length.
I would have liked to have chatted.
My contention was always that I like Clark more because he loves Lois.
Yeah.
Because she's not a sort of ditzy dolly bird.
She's a classic 1978 American
proper
actress.
Yeah,
she's
absolutely.
You know somebody really brilliant who'd be an Annie Hall or something?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
She's like a great character, isn't she?
Yeah,
and
no,
she's
absolutely.
A reason that movie felt cool. Wasn't it? Because Christopher Reeve is just playing Superman and you had to surround him with real people.
Yeah, and they're all really good.
Yeah, totally.
And the book thing we're talking about, the Usborne Supernatural Guides.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any of them? They were great, and I've got them in the house. I'll bring them to the next one, and I fucking love them. And another fan of them is the great Matthew Holness, the creator of Garth Marenghi, who posts these sorts of things up all the time on Twitter, and that's one of the ones he posted. I was very pleased to see that he's a fan of them too, because they're great.
Now, I have to return to the film now, and one of our perennial questions in these films, which is, how does that economy work? This here is the factory that produces supposedly the most Halloween masks in the world.
Yeah.
Right? There's just folks standing painting them one at a time. Unless they've got like a 30 years in a van. But it's
like backstage at one horror film, isn't it? Essentially, isn't it? Yeah.
So, covers. We used to get you. Do people still buy? Now, here's a question for the listener.
Mm-hmm.
Do people still buy what you used to get? Remember, you used to buy those books, glossy books, that just had artists' paintings of spaceships in them.
Yeah, you know, like Chris Foss and
people
like
that. Yeah. And
you mean the art of books, like the art of Alan?
No. They weren't like the art. You know, the art of Dune or something like that. They were just artists who would paint. You know, futuristic scenes. Do you still get them?
I don't know, but I remember those.
Because they used to be a big thing. Yeah, they were good books. Because we had a few of them.
I think my favourite cover of anything I've got on my shelves is a thing I got when I was 4. I used to get these like quite odd presents, like as a kid, that were maybe 10 years too early or 10 years too late kind of thing. Right? When I was 4, before I could read, I get the Encyclopedia of Knowledge, which I've still got in the house.
Oh, I've got that somewhere.
Which is one of those things, though, that... It's such a broad term, isn't it? The Encyclopedia of Knowledge.
I've lost the cover of the dust jacket.
But the cover for it is like a guy, a scientist, pouring one test tube into another test tube, an aborigine and a cheetah,
there
and things
go.
Like you know, so it's a real, and I love the
and
fact that book could be about anything.
George White here is saying that I think this is what he's saying, that the factory that we've just seen here in this film was a real factory. It's the Don Post factory, who made all the masks.
I seem to recall that was the case. Yeah. He also says here, I'm the only one to think that Conal Cochrane, who's Daniel Hurley, actually has a point. He's rebelling against the American prostitution of Irish culture. No, George, he's murdering children. TV Creams and Off the Telly's Graham Kibble Whites. It says, on a Halloween tip, I had Bob Monkhouse suggested as a LinkedIn contact this week.
Very good.
What of his skills? Would the panels endorse?
Well, Gagsmithery.
Gagsmithery, yeah.
Saluting.
Yeah, she's really good at saluting. Yeah, Cuff twiddling.
I watched an episode of Bob's Full House this week. I think I tweeted you one of the jokes in the opening monologue, which is that the producer, the producer's diet, everybody's trying to lose weight, and he's on a diet, and he's on the F planet. Oh, he eats his fibre. He's not losing any weight, but at least we always know where he is when we need him.
The
sound's been really bad for a while now.
The comedy timing gulp.
We've got
and which dead celeb would the panel like to connect to on which social media platform?
Funnily enough, on LinkedIn,
Dorothy Parker's Twitter feed.
On LinkedIn about 2 months ago, it offered me Jeremy Beadle.
Did it
really?
Yeah.
I can't remember if Beadle is dead or not.
He's
one of those guys.
He's a hero of ours. Met him. We met him. You had a long conversation with him, man. Yeah, I met him a couple of times. Agree.
He's a lovely man. He's a dead man.
Did you have...
That's quite a feature of tonight's broadcast.
Did anyone give you, as a present, because I had this, because I think this could clinch it that we have to live together after this. It was a three-book pack of Alien, the illustrated story.
Uh-huh.
And it came with a book about Star Trek, the movie.
Oh.
And the third thing, I can't remember what it was. And they were bundled together in, like, Bargain Books?
Mm.
Bargain Books used to have it bundled together, and I can't remember what the third one was. But I've got Alien, the illustrated story somewhere in the house, because I read that before I'd seen the
book. I had a Star Trek, the movie, pop-up book.
Oh, very good. Right. That'd be more interesting in the film.
Yeah, well, especially because one of the pop-up things, there wasn't much popping up.
No.
In them. Like the film.
Yeah.
But there was a bit where it was a picture of Leonard Nimoy,
uh-huh.
Spock, out there, and he had a little tab to pull down the bottom. And the strapline on it was, Spock demonstrates his sense of humour.
Mm-hmm.
And you pulled the tab, and one of his eyebrows went up. I'm sad
of that.
I think we're getting more skills in for Bob Monkhouse.
Go for it.
Archery supervision, survey administration, and IT support.
Can I endorse all of those skills?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does anybody actually know what LinkedIn does?
No. Like anyone who works in hospitals, I once went on it to try and find somebody, sort of research-wise, and I've been fucking plagued by LinkedIn ever since.
Absolutely. Masterminds Chris Hughes has been in touch.
Yes. So this is Chris Hughes from TV Cream, and we once received
an
email from Masterminds Chris Hughes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Who's one of the airheads, isn't he now?
He is now.
And he emailed us.
He's around the hospital a lot.
Yeah, I think he emailed us just on a general point. And so Chris Hughes decided to reply. And basically replied, "Dear Chris, you made my life a misery. I have the same name. All the best, Chris."
Signed, Chris Hughes. But what's he wanting?
Has
he been in touch?
Yeah, he was the
Archdiocese
administration.
Oh, so it is.
It must be weird, though. You've no control over somebody showing up. Anything can happen. Like, I knew a guy who looked exactly like Fred West in Coatbridge. Exactly like Fred West. Uh-huh. And up until Fred West, it didn't matter. And then suddenly...
There's a really bad taste joke there about Coatbridge and Fred West, but let's not.
You know, as I was saying it out loud, I was thinking.
He's an ice cream man.
And what's he like?
The guy, lovely. Really nice. Guy's a tailor. Okay. And he said all his life now, people just say, "Do you know, you remind me of somebody?" And he always says Fred West. I know. Oh, it takes people a minute to find out.
I've got a feeling there's a certain
there's
a certain type of old man, middle class old man. Everyone looks like either Harold Shipman or what was his name, David Kelly, that went off and
Dr.
David Kelly.
There's a sort of
brand of retired public servant. He looks like that.
Oh, George has come up with a top fact.
Go on in, Georgie boy.
Let's hear it.
The Halloween 3 masks were actually made and released. One pops up in the circus parade in Octopussy at the airbase.
There you go.
Nice one. Wow. Actually pulls in one of my favourite ever films, which is Octopussy.
Look at that. Boom.
Right, we're deep into the plot. Yeah. So it's like, what the fuck is happening?
She's been asking too many questions.
There's something going on. He's trying to get in. What the fuck? But it properly kicks off when they test the masks on the family. Mm. And then it goes batshit insane. So,
My question is, do we like this film?
Yeah. I love this film.
Why?
It's a nice tone.
Chris, why?
It has it's got a really nice tone. Mm-hmm. I think it's palpably Nigel Neill.
Yeah.
Dan O'Hurley here is just superb in it. Yeah. It is a great payoff. Mm-hmm. And actually, it plugs into, for the time, a really nice idea, which is that sort of mass media, mm-hmm. Damaging people.
That's
and
quite
about and all that sort of thing. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think it's quite a
Carpenter thing as well, though, isn't it? Yeah. There's a lovely anti-authoritarianism about Carpenter that makes him unlike most other filmmakers of his period in America. Because if you think about it, they were utterly establishment, weren't they, a lot of those guys? He was this lone voice, wasn't he?
Mm. You had a run-in with John Carpenter recently, didn't you?
I did. I went to see him in concert a week ago. Mm. It was fantastic at the Usher Hall in Edinburgh.
Does he do the walking backwards with a guitar?
He didn't do walking backwards with a guitar. He stood there playing his keyboards.
I feel you guys
are kind of here or something.
No, it's true. I was meant to go by the coast, so I couldn't go.
Yeah, you couldn't go.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
I didn't know this.
I don't know, he too. He was in Edinburgh.
He was in Edinburgh last week. I went there with my family.
Did you do any chat before him?
I just came on and played the music.
You guys might know this already, but did you hear he's coming to the King's Theatre?
No. Oh, is it Roger Moore?
Roger Moore.
We
went to see him a couple of years ago.
I just bought my ticket today.
We went to see him a couple of years ago at the Festival Theatre.
How was he? Was he good?
Yeah, it was good. Oh, brilliant,
It was just
I love him so much, Roger Moore.
Why wouldn't you? You'd have to be off.
No, well, weirdly, I phoned around my brothers today and said, listen, I'm going to treat everybody. I'm about to buy tickets for Roger Moore. And they were like, are you joking?
What?
I was like, what?
So have you got tickets going?
Did you buy the tickets when you made the call?
No, luckily,
how many brothers do you have?
since we've now had you twice over for these times, it's about time,
No, it was great. I mean, he talks about... all his films, getting started. You talked about Grace Jones.
Lovely fella.
Lovely fella. the man who haunted himself in North Carolina. Just fantastic. Yeah. Talks about getting pished and gambling all his money away. And...
Really? Did he blow his cash? I didn't know that. Is that why he was doing adverts and things eventually? Yeah.
And his missus was there.
His missus is a billionaire. Or she inherited a massive fortune, yeah.
His missus was there. And a really creepy wee guy was there who'd done a drawing of her framed and was trying to...
Was it a good drawing?
It was a Matt LeBlanc at the station drawing.
Right, oh yeah.
Robbie Williams
at the station.
Used to
Robbie Williams, didn't it?
Yeah.
Now it's Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah.
That's my favourite phone-in ever on Swap Shop. It was somebody... telling, you know, the guest how beautiful the wife was. You know, because it's quite creepy when somebody's got an interest in the family, isn't it? Yeah. And somebody phoned into Swap Shop and it was Bruce Forsyth was the guest. And it's that thing where they're sitting with all the kids and there was a live phone in. Yeah. And somebody said, I just want to say, I think your wife's really good looking. And he said, oh, thanks very much. And they said, no, really, look really good looking. And then there was just silence. It was the creepiest ever phone in Swap Shop.
It wasn't Kenny Lynch, was it?
And you remember, you haven't seen that recently?
No, I haven't seen it since I was a kid. Yeah.
There was some good stick from John Carpenter.
I have to try that one too.
Sorry? One was when they go into the live, they put on dark glasses and all the sort of signs come up behind you. And at the end, he's saying goodbye to you. He says, be careful out there if you're driving home tonight. Christine is on the road. And also, and typically for John Carpenter, who I do regard as the great genius, it was over within 90 minutes. Because that's what I know.
Get it on.
Finish it up.
So now he's battering one of these guys, and then they finally work out.
That's got to hurt.
Do you know what? I was just thinking that.
Fuck you, Julian Assange.
Because you know the way the clever thing with the casting in T-1000 was to get somebody small, Robert Patrick, playing the dangerous guy.
Yeah.
And he looks so slight, but because he's super strong, it makes him a bit more frightening. Because
they're robots.
But that's T-1000. Like,
controversially, I don't like Terminator 2.
It's a remake of Terminator 1, really.
But it's not as good, though.
I know.
Yeah. I know and it's got a sappy ending.
I know. That. As a kid seen it, well, yeah. Early 20s.
Stop saying you were a kid. you were still older than me, and I saw it when I was a student. Yeah. So.
But I remember my pals all and I all looking around at each other. When the thumb went up at the end, we were like, no, we're checking out of this.
Let's take a moment. Yeah. Oh, sorry, let's go back to the wires.
I was going to say that you were talking about how you had the great pleasure of going to see John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. Well, I had the great pleasure of interviewing Nigel Neal.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, tell the story about the conventions. Tell the convention story, Jared.
Tell the convention story. There was an episode of BBC 4 series Time Shift was made about him, and they were trying to drum up publicity, so they contacted me to do an interview with him. And he was lovely, called him up.
The crisps one.
And initially, when he answered the phone, he said, hello.
Hello.
Yes, so they're building a new cinema now down the road. And I thought, oh, goodness. Because they'd warned me that he's quite nice. But apparently he was involved in some campaigning about the local cinema where I lived on the Isle of Man. And then he'd assumed that I was someone friendly about that. So once we'd got past that confusion, he was great. He was very chatty. And he told a very long story about a drama that he tried to get produced by ATV, but Lou Grade had put the kibosh on it.
It's not happening!
Yeah. So he told me the whole story.
And he danced away.
And then he went very quiet, and then he said, so, Lou Grade, he's my enemy now.
But why did he say it in a West Country accent?
Because that's the best kind of accent he had. Well, I can do Fatherland of Llanthorpe. So
that was basically Final Fatherland of Llanthorpe, there, wasn't it?
What does Final Llanthorpe appear on?
Hello, I'm Father Lionel Llanthorpe, and this is Fortune TV Live. So then the story that you were fishing for is kind of an addendum to the Kinvig thing that we talked about earlier, which is he was at a science fiction convention, and he was getting berated by the audience for having made Kinvig. And as he describes it, one woman put her hand up and said, why did you make this program that belittles all of our beliefs about UFOs and alien intelligence? And his response was, I made this program precisely because of people like you.
Brilliant. Oh my God. He has a little cameo. Do you read to your kids The Tiger Who Came to Tea?
I did it once, yeah.
Yeah, if you look at the last picture when the dad turns up at the end, it's Nigel Neal because he was married to Deborah.
That's right, it's his missus.
What's her name? The Morgue Books.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he looks just like him. And they go, it's a brilliant, actually, it's a lovely ending to The Tiger Who Came to Tea. You'd love it, Chris. Because they go down a proper high street to a cafe. And in the cafe for their tea, they have sausage and chips.
Oh,
that's sausage and when we were a proper country, Chris.
Yeah, when I was a proper country. When sausage and chips was a proper tea.
I've actually found a cafe that I didn't know existed. You know the cafes are closing one by one all across the world?
Yeah.
But I found one I didn't know about, which I'm sure you guys have seen a million times, but I'd always passed it and didn't realise how good it was.
Uh-huh.
The Tivoli.
Aye, I was there just last week.
I'd never been until about 2 weeks ago.
I was going to get a new pair of glasses just round the corner.
Tivoli is in Stockwell Street, I think.
Yeah, it's a brilliant place.
And it's been there forever. It's never changed.
They've got a piano in the cafe for sing-alongs at night.
Can I do a quick callback to our chat earlier on about famous people we'd like to connect to on social media.
Uh-huh.
Gary Gillett, etc. Dr. Who magazine, says, I'd like to connect with Emu on Facebook.
Yay!
I actually have on me, just by chance, a photograph of me in 1983.
What was the last thing that went through Rod Hill's mind before he died?
It's funny, that looks like every single school photo, isn't it? Yeah, there's even the archetypes of each kid in the class. You're that one in the
middle.
You're
showing, and the one pictures on a commentary now.
That's fine. Where are you? Which are you?
I'm the one in the blue jumper in the middle.
In the back?
Yeah.
But we're saying every 1980s school photo, there is the archetypes of each person, isn't there? Yeah. It's every single school's got it.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on, Chris.
We can put this up on Twitter.
Yeah, I just tweet that. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Where are we in the film now, O'Connor? Well,
if you start seeing that Patrick Trout story,
sort of thing
through, yeah. What's that? You see that the Omen style noose of the thing goes through that.
George White also picked up on what he thinks a major plot hole. Did you see this
tweet? No, go on.
He says there's major plot
fuck
hole
off,
in
George.
This film. What happened to Ellie, the real Ellie, as the android is a mute? Have we been picking up on that?
I've no idea.
Do you know what though? See, as a kid, I couldn't wait to get older and have a computer like that. And then I was disappointed when they made computers small.
I know.
So my dream for my office, I've been thinking about this over the last couple of weeks, is to get some kind of computery thing. Like, I was going to have a Sharp MZ80K or something as the front of it kind of thing, and then build one of those flashing light things in the background so my office looked the way I dreamed it would look when I was an adult.
Would you have ticker tape?
Oh, totally, to get information.
And would you have big tapes?
You need to have computers, big tapes from one way, and then quickly the other way.
What would be the one way to defeat that supercomputer? What's the one question that a computer can never answer?
What is love?
Because I might need to know that if it turns on me, you know. It's WHY? Question mark.
No, I think it's what is love.
Or if it's a Scottish computer, HOW?
I think.
What's happening in the film, Craig?
Well, what's happening now is they've captured our lovers and the family.
Mm.
Who are the top salespeople, and they're going to do an experiment on them to show.
So,
that's your desk there, Jack. That, look.
Mr. Cochran has sold more Silver Shamrock Halloween masks than anybody else who has come to put in his order. Not a terribly good business move, this, has to be said. So, him and his blousy, excellent wife and their kid buddy, annoying kid buddy, are going to be given a sneak preview, market tested as they're told, of what's the big lines are going to be next year.
Okay.
And this is what happens.
Every red-haired actor in Hollywood was like, yes, when this movie came out.
William Hartnell on time and relative dimension in MySpace.
Oh, there you go.
Boom.
Boom. And yes, so Craig's posted up that picture.
Yeah. The year of Season of the Witch. That was Mrs. Balfour, my primary seven teacher, a redoubtable looking lady.
Mrs. Balfour. Great name.
Somebody said it's Emu dead. Emu was never alive. I do hate to tell you that. Right, here we go.
Actually, Gary Gillett has come in with a very, very good comment about Emu.
What's that?
He says, not in our hearts, not dead, TV's favourite quarrelsome flightless bird from Australia, until the arrival of Tegan.
I think I did it.
Don't want you, Pete.
Okay. Right, here we go. This genuinely. Now, when did you first see it? Because I first saw it on telly.
Yeah.
No, sort of late 80s. It was on a Friday night sometime. Yeah. And my pal, the late John, and I sat and watched it, and I thought, it's actually quite funny.
It's unusual to see a kid getting taken down, isn't it?
And that still freaks my son out.
Wait and see.
Oh man, this isn't good.
And they just start working out.
Yeah.
Heads melted, out come
that's
the snakes.
Crazy.
Makes sense.
Mum and Dad don't kind of bother their arse too much when he's dying, do they?
To be fair, they might not have liked him that much.
Yeah, he was called Buddy,
you
dick. Oh, now she's feeling it now.
And now, brilliantly, all the wee nasty wee snakes go for them.
Where did that giant snake go?
They develop out of that. It's magic.
An idea sort of picked up in Prince of Darkness, doesn't it? Mm. With all the sort of creepy crawlies carrying things about.
If you want to cast somebody as an 80s corporate guy, though, can it get any better than Dan O'Hara?
Well, of course, he's also the head of in Robocop.
Yeah, he's the old man.
I'm
very disappointed.
I wouldn't mind him if... I wouldn't mind multinational companies taking over everything if he was the boss.
If he was the judge,
he's so charming. Yeah.
interesting career Danny Hurley when you look at his credits. So there's things like this.
What was his young stuff? I never saw his young days.
The earliest thing I can remember seeing him noticeably leading in is in Waterloo.
Oh, really?
He's Field Marshal Ney in Waterloo.
But really? It's one of those guys like Tom Bosley, who only ever is known old.
Well,
like
I pointed out in a previous commentary, which got picked up by George for some reason, that David Bradley only ever seemed to get famous, you know, from Our Friends in the North onwards.
I was going to say, that's when I first
That was the first time I saw him.
I went through a spell recently of watching a lot of Nearest and Dearest.
Mm-hmm. He's in that?
And he's in an episode. He plays a copper in a black and white episode of Nearest and Dearest.
The movie of that is fantastic. I love the movie.
This reminds me a bit of the set of The Fly 2.
Absolutely.
That's a classic Nigel Neal frame, that was, wasn't it? Like scientists chipping away at Stonehenge while somebody walks off down a corridor.
Do they're chipping tiny wee bits off it and putting them into the chips.
They're literally chips.
Because the stone was used by druids to kill children on Samhain, the ancient Celtic festival of the dead.
There was a great fake photograph on Twitter today, which was builders moving Stonehenge afoot today because the clocks went back an hour at the weekend. But it was brilliant. There was trucks and everything all around it. It was great.
So have we talked much about the career of John Carpenter?
This film? No.
I haven't talked much about it.
He's a very interesting guy because I think he's the best concept guy in the business.
I love him.
Why would you say that?
Just the concepts are so great. When you say like They Live as a concept is such a beautiful, simple idea, isn't it? Or Halloween or whatever, you forget what he invented. Nobody had really seen anything like it. But I don't always think the execution is fantastic. But the concept is always king with him. It's amazing.
Craig?
I think Mark can fuck off. My contention is he has one of the greatest runs in modern cinema.
He's five great movies in a row.
Well, I think it goes beyond that. You've got Dark Star, Assault on Precinct 13, Halloween.
Darky Star.
Halloween. The Fog. Escape from New York. The Thing. Then you get into a slightly sticky patch because you've got Christine, which is a good film.
Yeah, but it's not great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A great idea, though.
Great idea. He didn't direct Halloween 2, did he? He just produced it, wrote it. So you've got Christine there. Then you go to Big Trouble in Little China, which is a masterpiece. And Starman, which is a good film.
Beautiful film.
But it's not a great film.
No, because that and Christine are the two.
Yeah.
So you've got seven. It's still a good film.
I'll put it up there. I love it.
But then you get to Prince of Darkness and They Live, and they're both great as well. So you're up to around 10, 9, 10, 11.
It's very rare to get five great movies in a row. John Landis did it as well, you know. Like even like Chris Nolan's kind of done it as well. There's a few really good movies in there, you know. But it's very rare. Even Spielberg's got his 1941s and everything punctured in the really good stuff. So I think he's got that. But I do think his concepts are generally better than the movie itself. Especially by the time you get to the 90s where he wasn't getting the budget probably he wanted to make the movies to. But I even think Vampires is a great idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea,
But it's not a great movie, you know.
And so what are the hallmarks for this film?
And he now looks like the old baddie from Big Trouble in Little
So are there things that you can...
That.
Okay.
Well, yeah, Dean Cundey shot that lovely big widescreen.
Okay. And then if somebody appears in the background like that, quickly it has to go...
So you're looking at sort of lovely big 35mm anamorphic framing. Mm-hmm. You're looking at lovely big... wide shots with stuff. Because I always think one of the scariest things in one of his films, and Halloween, I'm not a great fan of stalker movies, but that is the great one. Someone jumping up at close quarters and stabbing you isn't that scary, but the shot looking across the street to the other house with Michael Myers walking at quite a pace towards you puts the shitters up, mate.
Yeah.
Because you've got time to see him and try and get out the way.
Yeah.
And you know he's coming.
Yeah.
I love that.
Now, Chris, I'm going to hand over to you a breaking fact. I think this is my favourite fact so far of the night.
George goes back to tell us that David Bradley was also in Corey as the detective who investigated Arnold Swain's bigamy.
I've never seen Corey ever.
Have you not?
Not really? Never
Swain.
Seen Corey. I've never tasted fish, I've never tasted coffee. I've never seen Coronation.
Arnold Swain was a bigamist who took in Emily.
What year were you talking
about? It's so sensitive.
Oh, 70s. 70s,
right?
No, early 80s.
Oh, Emily.
Oh, Emily. Emily.
Did he not try to talk her into like a suicide pact or something?
Yeah.
Tell you what, that was scary stuff.
It's great.
So what year was that?
It's too big.
Early 80s, Arnold Swain. He was around for about
I think a soap opera is like a relationship, though. It's too big a commitment.
No, but the thing is, it's not really... Well, I don't really think it's worth it at the moment, Coronation Street, but it comes and goes.
Mm.
But you can actually... Like, there's random episodes on YouTube. You can watch them on their own.
Really?
Because they're just beautifully... Yeah. They're just beautifully acted and written.
There's a great episode when Stan Ogden's held hostage. Have you seen that one?
Yes.
Because he does...
They make him sing Silent Night.
Yeah, but what's great about that is that that's one of the few TV programmes where the person who's held hostage has behaved how I think I'd behave.
Yeah.
Which is, he just does that? Whatever the guy wants to say, and he's just shit scared.
What's the circumstance? Why?
It was something to do with... wasn't it some guy who'd been... was on the run from the army or something, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. And
what they do is they hold them up, but there's an incredible scene of them where they make them sing. It's Christmas, and he makes them sing Silent Night.
Yeah.
But they sing it as you would imagine they do. Yeah. They make it sing louder, and they just go, Silent Night, Holy Night. And the camera pulls away from the house. It's incredible.
I thought it was all the pattern and all that. I didn't realise there was hostage situations.
Not very often.
Not very often, not like now, but not like soaps now. But they did happen.
Yeah, but that's what made it memorable as well, though, wasn't it?
Mm.
It was because it was quite mundane, and then you get the odd thing.
Yeah, and then a lorry would drive in at the
We are missing Dan O'Hurley's great scene here when he's explaining the proper meaning of Halloween.
Professor loves Sam Hain.
I know a guy called Sam Hain. I actually do.
Sam Hain's a great guy.
How annoying is it when people complain now about how Halloween's been Americanized and, you know, people go trick-or-treating and everything, when we know that it started in Scotland and Ireland?
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. And everybody thinks it's an American import, but we... is it a British export? A Celtic export?
Yeah. And the word eerie comes from Scots as well. Did you know that?
Really? I did not know that, no.
Yeah.
Only invented in 1964. That's quite eerie.
Yeah, it's meant for the comic.
What?
Oh, moving on.
Yeah, the only difference, I suppose, now is that guising is that you don't go into people's houses to tell a story about
I make the kids do that. Yeah, and the neighbours are all like, why? You don't need to do this.
Well, be all right
they must do
it's
this.
All right if his neighbours
are. The police are around and you can't
do that. You know, wow.
So, George telling us it was Shane Rimmer who played the GI in Coronation Street who had Stan Ogden as hostage.
He was trying to crack on to Audrey. Was he not. Or maybe he was a GI, I thought he was Canadian.
He's also in Superman.
Oh, Shinrimmer's been in that one.
Yeah.
Who's that? Who's
Shinrimmer?
Was he?
Mm-hmm.
Who was he in Superman?
He's in Superman 2. He's on the moon at the beginning. He's the guy in the moon landing.
With controls.
No, he's in the controls saying, did he see a curl? That's what we used to call a comet out of.
Is that him?
Because he's also in The Spy Who Loved Me. He's one of the submarine commanders in The Spy Who Loved Me.
You know who the guy's talking to then is Cliff from Cheers?
Yeah, John Ratzenberger.
Yeah, John Ratzenberger, who also appears in loads of these films as well. Yeah.
He was in The Missile Command in Superman 1 as well. I always felt he got that NASA promotion
after
Superman 1.
But that's in Superman 3. You diss it. But at the end of it, there's a picture of the president on the wall in one of the offices, and it's the president from Superman 2.
And Larry Lamb.
E.G. Wallace.
E.G.
Wallace.
I kind of like the continuity,
Marshall.
Do you know, there's one thing I do like in Superman 3, and that's the rescue at the start, you know, where the guy's drowning in the car. It's so improbable, but I do kind of like it, because it always reminds me that the Superman films are very like the Omen movies. I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but they're shot in a very similar way. But if you take Superman out of the pictures, it's a really long, elaborate setup to a death. But they continue that in Superman 3 as well, where, you know, a kid falls, you know, in the middle of a field in an unlikely way and a combine harvester's going to chop
off.
And a guy drowning in a car. It feels very like Omen deaths, doesn't it?
I hadn't thought about that. That's actually quite a good point.
I'm just going to show you this.
What is it?
I just saw that.
Yeah. Band on the run.
So this is a twink from Tariq team. Craig, who's that? I don't know who that is.
I don't know.
That's Batman Gelly. That's
Camilla Batman Gelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like her because she's got the name Batman in her name, though. So absolutely. It makes me trust her.
Yes,
we love her. We think she's great.
Yeah. We like her. We like
King Camilla.
Our favourite dessert is Persian Shalabella Melba. And our favourite drink is
King Camilla Cani.
King Camilla Cani.
And our favourite special effects guy is
Dan O'Bannon. So there we are.
So.
Oh, there we are. Apparently, Rimmer had two roles in Corey. That sounds wrong.
One is Audrey's ex. One is Audrey's ex. Yeah. But 20 years earlier as Joe Donnelly.
Yeah. Audrey's ex was the one, and Sir Alf had to chase him away.
Lord Alf.
Yep.
Lord Sir Alf.
Lord Sir Alf of Roberts.
The greatest.
Is he the greatest soap opera character of all time?
Is he deliberately skull-like in this Dan O'Herlihy, do you think? The way he's sort of made up and shot, that his features look very, very skeletal.
Do you think you're right? The darkness over the eyes.
Yeah, drunk. You are supposed to believe, though,
that
this factory is producing enough masks to give him the money, power, and influence to nick a bit of Stonehenge, bring it across, and start chipping away at it, and develop this technology. I mean, fair play to the man. So other things he's been in...
Back in the day, though, you could get to Stonehenge.
I remember you used
to be able to wander right up to him.
Yeah, I was in the National Lampoon's European Vacation.
It was after you'd been up to it that they...
Yeah, I know. Do you know what it was? After I left it, was that stink of piss.
It was.
There used to be the news story every year about druids fucking about it and the equinox and things like that.
Leave them alone. They're not harming anyone.
Apart from the sacrifices.
Yeah.
Apart from all the bairns in the world.
So,
Fat Die Hard.
Can he get over there? Hello. Hiya, Bob. Look, quickly. Oh, no, here comes. There you go. The last Starfighter on the hill here.
Yes, he's in that.
Wayne Gregg.
What are you laughing at? Where's
from? By a John Carpenter alumnus. Mick Castle.
Yes.
So where are we with the film now?
He's escaped from his little room, and now he's got to somehow put a stop to this dastardly plan.
And will it involve someone just having to make a sacrifice?
No. He has to either stop it or stop it being broadcast.
It is actually quite similar to Videodrome, isn't it?
Well, I suppose there's a sort of
fear of mass media and... Yeah. But the evil actually comes out of the telly or the mask.
This is better than Videodrome, though.
Videodrome's good. I like Videodrome.
That's alright.
I haven't seen it since it came out. Again, one of those films I've never watched since.
When you were five.
Yes. I wasn't even born when I saw it.
Craig, what was that film that you wanted George to identify? Because I don't think he has.
It was a Sherlock Holmes film.
Just quickly run through the key details again.
It was, there's a sequence in it in which Holmes and Watson are out on the moors at night. It's very scary.
Yeah.
Obviously in Burbank, and they're looking for someone who's out there doing up to no good.
Okay.
And the way the scene is shot, it's a sort of mid shot, and the moon is very big in frame. And at one point, you just see a figure moving away from in front of the moon, and he basically looks a bit like the Lunar Simeon from Trev and Simon. Like, anyway. He's in a sort of one piece suit and he's dancing about. But he put the shutters up me when I was a kid.
So the first person who can tweet us the identity of that film. We'll get to share the rights of issue one of Mark Miller's Meteor Man.
That's who it works, yeah.
It's funny, people talk about their favourite Holmes, you know, whether it's Basil Rathbone, Jeremy Brett, and you very rarely hear people talk about their favourite Watson. I think Nigel Bruce is up there.
Yeah.
Actually, I do love Nigel Bruce. Yeah.
Oh, see, he's a dick about the Rathbone.
No,
Jeremy Brett one you're wrong about.
Yeah. No, what I say about the Jeremy Brett ones is that everything about them is beautiful. They're beautifully adapted. They look tremendous. Mm. They're a great collection of the entire oeuvre. But Brett is just a bit too much to me.
As it goes on, there's
a problem. But Brett had a problem because they started to take it seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So then Mycroft started to...
Yeah.
Charles Gray started to cover a lot of it. And there's whole episodes of the casebook of Sherlock Holmes where Jeremy Brett is sitting at the time because he can barely move.
Yeah.
But I just find it too hard. And also, Holmes in the stories is actually empathetic. He's not cold and kind of clinical. And he's played as such and slightly odd. He's odder than he actually is in the stories. He wouldn't do what he does if he didn't care. And so the character to me is slightly wrong. My favourite performance as Sherlock Holmes is Clive Merrison in the BBC radio adaptations.
But your favourite Watson?
Well, actually, in that one, it's Michael Williams, and he's fantastic as him, actually.
Interesting.
I quite like James Mason as him in Murder by Decree. It's a great movie.
Jeremy Brett had two Watsons.
Yeah, he did.
I didn't like that second Watson. I liked
David
Burke,
who was the first one,
and
then Edward Hardwick,
who
was a bit... He was sort of a bit cuddlier.
Some flimsy?
David Burke was very good, because you believed he was a former soldier.
Why did they get shot of him?
Well, I've no idea.
Well, actually, I was really surprised by my feeling this, because I've never seen the point of him otherwise, is that in the crazy but good fun, Shane, what's his name? Not Shane Ritchie, Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie.
Oh, Peter, what's that?
I think Jude Law's a very good Watson.
Yeah, totally out of character. Jude Law being watchable.
Being watchable and actually having a point, yeah.
He's weirdly likeable in that.
Yeah, yeah. And he feels like really a soldier.
Because they're great films. But, Jack, we've had on the Twitters...
What?
You're meant to read the show.
Yeah, no, but I don't know which thing you're talking about. But okay.
In all seriousness,
Sherlock.
Sherlock.
Do the panel like
that show.
Seasons 1 and 2, fantastic.
Okay. I still haven't watched the Christmas one.
I love Sherlock. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Where do you think?
I love Stephen Moffat. I absolutely love Stephen Moffat. When he writes it, I enjoy it. You know, and Mark Gatiss as well.
Which ones do you not like?
I think season 3 wasn't quite
as
good.
What were the season 3 ones? Because there's not that many of them.
And then that most recent special, the one where it was the wedding speech, but on for 90 minutes or whatever. That didn't
love that.
You know, you seem
quite like that one. Yeah, that was the one I did like.
I don't actually.
Season 1 and 2, I love. I think season 1 and 2.
I don't recall any of them. I'll tell you.
And that dream sequence one was terrible.
The one I didn't see. I've still not seen that one.
You just told them the whole point of it.
There is a great synopsis of that. I'm probably not watching that Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Which is Sherlock gets off a plane.
Yes.
Yeah, but the point was.
So he's on a plane and has a dream, right? Thanks, pal.
Frankly, that is the sort of thing that a total wanker would say.
Right.
Because the point of it is, it's like a Christmas special. It sits apart from it slightly. It takes them off to a different place, like a country house or whatever, and it takes place in itself at Christmas time, and then it moves on.
You do a special thing about
it. It was fantastic.
Well,
yeah.
My problem with it actually was that they preceded it with a previously on Sherlock.
Yes, exactly. And you'd wait until a year.
The whole gaff, right. I thought.
The one I'd agree is weak. Actually, Hound of the Baskervilles isn't great.
No. Yeah, it's not great. The middle ones weren't very good.
Yeah, but the one that I really didn't like at all was the version of the Master Blackmailer.
The payoff was terrible.
Well, it wasn't just the payoff, because the premise of it was that he had all the, you know, he has all the information.
Mm-hmm.
And in the story, of course, Charles Augustus Milverton, the worst man in London, mm-hmm. has all the letters.
Yeah.
But you discover in this one that he just knows it all.
Mm-hmm.
That means fucking nothing. Now, I know he's meant he can put it in his papers and all that, but so there's no evidence for any of it. So, you know, you would supposedly blackmailing a government minister who would just say, well, that's bollocks. Where's the evidence? There's no evidence.
But if he's got a photographic memory of where the evidence is?
No, but he doesn't. Because it was all just... Yeah. There was no library, there was no archive. It was just all in his head.
I think what they suffered from as well was waiting that year as well, perhaps. You know, because to wait a year for a dream sequence...
But the thing is that the episode, I still enjoyed the episode a lot because I liked the characters and I liked following them and all that. Yeah. I just thought the story was weak.
The end of season 2 was so great, that death of Sherlock Holmes thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you waited that year, was it 18 months? Yeah. And then you were like, hang on, there was no resolution. And see if you wait that length of time and get no resolution to how it happens.
Here's
the beginning of the end.
I love this when he has his little...
But you don't know yet because you've not seen the rest of it, so it might all be
But we're going to be waiting the rest of our lives at that level of pace. You know, so. No, I mean when he died in the end of season 2.
Oh, right,
and then the beginning of season 3.
When he jumped off the tip of the hat.
Yeah.
Now,
the film.
Oh, okay.
It's coming to its conclusion now.
Oh, that's such an Arjun Neil thing.
Yeah.
Look at that. Stone men, a possessed man, computers, a big warehouse,
and mass blue broadcast and the blue light,
But that's very John Carpenter too, isn't it? All of those drums.
Absolutely. Wow.
Well, Carpenter adores.
But... No. You see, this is the thing. This is the kick in the pants. The masks are still out there.
Mm-hmm.
The advert's still going on.
Mm-hmm. Means nothing.
Now he has to stop the advert. And that's the big thing.
Yeah.
And that's where it actually...
in an ending...
That's when it makes great.
That pre-triggers They Live.
Yes. Quite.
The Irish-American that's forgotten people.
You
don't...
You never hear
you never get
of
films
that.
Last
night. No. Yeah. Yeah.
They never talk about their past or that either, do they?
So, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that there's a rumour that actually the reason why they didn't properly resolve the Sherlock cliffhanger
mm-hmm.
was because they had worked out how he'd done it, but they shot it incorrectly and Watson was in the wrong place.
Oh, that's interesting.
I would rather have a continuity error than be disappointed after 18 months, though, I've got to say.
Yeah, because there was a sort of the fun of it was, oh, how did they do it? Working yeah. out, and then waiting to see if
and
they were right.
I remember the papers at school and that stuff.
What is wrong with you people? Like, well, once every few years.
Because we get to see what we like.
Once every, well, not really, because you've been telling us to stop. Once every few off. Years, you get a programme that comes on that's properly made, that's clever, that's smart, and you're just
yeah, but
think about it.
Well, but I think the point is that that bit wasn't properly made.
It was a letter. Still nobody's answered the best Watson. Still nobody's never given the best Watson. Who do you
think? I think it's probably David Burke. I do like
so
Nigel.
Is there an answer that you want?
Not just me. I'm Nigel Bruce all the way. Nigel Bruce.
I like Nigel Bruce, but I think he's a wee bit bumbling. But I think David Burke.
I do forget. Well. You don't buy him as a physician, mind you? Or is
no,
it?
No, yeah. I don't think you do.
No, I mean Nigel Bruce.
Oh, Nigel Bruce, no. He's a sort of nice, bumbly sidekick who can pull out a gun every now and again.
Yeah.
But David Burke looks like, you know, a doctor, he's a soldier, you know, all that sort of thing.
When I was a nipper, and you know we were talking earlier on about the way they don't show those old films anymore.
Yeah.
I just remember that when I was a nipper, we used to do impressions of Watson. From the Basil Rathbone. Holmes! Oh, Holmes! Hang on.
The thing is,
kids today.
It's like things like in the Dancing Men, story. It's, you know, it relies quite a lot on Watson knowing the code and being able to, you know, work at the code of the Dancing Men and all that. Mm-hmm. And they use that in the Basil Rathbone films. But it's sort of like, you know, Nigel Bruce going, "Oh, I know how this code," and all of a sudden you're a code breaker.
So we went like the floor of Rassilon.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
This
yeah.
is the game of Rassilon.
Bye.
Oh, you mean the easiest pie? Easiest, but no, he did.
He goes, bong, 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 bong,
right,
bong.
Here it is. Random jump across the floor.
Can you do that, but a bit slower next time.
Right, and then he jumps over randomly, and then just says, "Now go." Fucking what? What?
Now, George White, who still hasn't identified your Sherlock Holmes film.
Yeah, I don't actually understand
who is
what
the
he's
worst
saying
Watson.
There.
He says it's Bernard Fox in the Stuart Granger pilot, doing the same thing he did in the London Columbo.
Yeah, I think the problem is that George is literally the only person that's ever actually
is
seen
Stuart
that.
Fox, the one with the tash that Bernard plays Fox. That played Dr. Bombay in the Bewitched.
I have no
George.
Idea.
Wow. I think you and George need to sit down.
Who's also
I think you need to take this offline.
Who's also in either what's the John Wayne one in London? Is it McHugh or Brannigan?
Brannigan.
Yeah, I think it's Brannigan as well.
I used to work in a pub in which myself and two of the regulars, whenever they walked in the pub, you had to walk in and go, knack, knack, because they bust the door down, and say, Brannigan, you big mick son of a bitch.
So where are we at in the film, Chris?
He's now tearing across the countryside trying to find a phone, to find a way to tell the networks not to play the advert.
Because they're just sitting there waiting to hear if anyone's worried about an advert coming on. Wee guy in a control room. Hello, CTA. Hello. What's that?
Yeah, you know that company that's paid untold millions for this advert to go on all networks all at the same time. Don't turn it off. You've got to turn it off.
Of course we do, pal.
It's quite brave though when this.
Fuck off, you big orange bastard.
But when you think about this movie, it's jumped genres really, because it's not even quite a horror movie. It's a sci-fi movie, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So you can imagine the audience is utterly baffled. Mm. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you would be able to deal with that if you're into Carpenter.
Yeah.
Because you think, oh, it's a John Carpenter film, so it can shift true. Around and all that. Yeah. But if you're just a general, you know, from fucking buttfuck Idaho going out to a Halloween film, you're going to be like, what the fuck?
Who are these guys?
Why yah yah?
Bernard Fox is Dr. Bombay.
Thank you.
That is actually quite
impressive.
Pow! No.
Still don't know what that Sherlock Holmes film is, though.
No, it was Stuart Granger.
But he's not in Brannigan, George tells us.
I'm probably thinking of the Columbo episode. I just remember him, you know, turning up in the raincoat from, you know, like he's from the yard and he's like, welcome to London. So it's probably the Columbo episode. That is a shit episode though in London.
What do you make of Matt Ruffalo, Columbo reboot?
What? Really?
Really? This has been talked about, yeah.
Oh, yes, no, I'd heard. Are they actually doing it, though?
But it's one of those things mooted in progress development, you know?
The thing is,
Jess, what do you think about Mark Ruffalo?
The thing is...
Tom's just finished.
That's it, finished. You see, because they've got it turned off on, like, so many networks, but there's one still on.
It's a great ending.
Yeah.
Is there ever a horror film?
You would not get an ending like that. Well, nowadays they usually do.
But I don't know, do they though? Because I think the difference between a horror and a sci-fi is that horror always ends making you feel bad, isn't it? Whereas a sci-fi ends generally making you feel pretty good. It's been defeated. But horror,
you've thought this shit through too much for us.
That's my job. That's my job.
We just fucking, we work in a shop.
we don't have to think about it.
We just have to catch each other out in obscure facts.
The thing about Columbo, though, is the reason that Columbo worked was a technical reason as much as a dramatic reason.
What's that?
It was far longer than any other programme that was made at the time. Because with adverts, American adverts and all that, it stretched across like an hour and a half.
Right.
It was an American TV producer who's like a friend of a friend who explained this to me. And it was because you see how the murder happens right at the beginning.
Right.
You get how it's explained, how it happened right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it covers such a long time that viewers can go away and watch an episode of All in the Family or something, then come back.
That was done on purpose?
Yes.
That's bizarre.
So that they could, so that you could dip in and out of it.
Right.
And not miss. What you miss is the fun of, you know, him tracking it down and all the interactions.
This is Columbo.
But you know how it was done.
That's amazing.
How it happened and how it was done.
Yeah.
The problem is, I don't know, the more popular it got, then people stuck with it more and all that sort of thing. But clearly that's not something that's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
I know, right, it's different times, so it might not matter. But there was more than just, you know, writing and performing that was a secret to its success.
I can understand why people would suggest it. He looks like him, and particularly in Zodiac, he's actually very like him.
Mm. He's got a squishy face.
Would he do that? He's quite a serious actor, quite a committed actor, quite a kind
of... You know what would compel him to do it?
What was that?
Fucking millions of dollars.
Do you think so?
Because the other thing that they're perennially going on about over the years is Rumpel with Albert Finney.
All right. I'm not sure Finney could get about now to do it.
It's been years they've been talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that terrible idea of doing young Rumpel.
Yeah, Rumpel should never have been young.
There's only one book where he's young.
Yeah, that's right. The Penge Murders. That's right. Yeah.
On
which his fame rests.
Yeah, the rest of them are when he's basically retired age.
Yeah,
but can't retire.
And retires quite frequently, and then comes back again. Is the one where he goes off to Florida.
Oh, that's a great episode. Yeah. That's the one with the.
I've always been very fond of Nick.
The Children of the Sun.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there you go.
There's also
82,
rumors.
Dino De Laurentiis. Dino was involved.
I think you'll find it's pronounced Dino De Laurentiis.
There's also rumours that Neil Cross of Luther fame is going to reboot Sapphire and Steel. What do you think of that, Mark?
Fuck off.
Who the fuck?
I actually know something about that, and I can't say. I'll plead to the fifth one.
Will it feature, what's his name, Idris Elba as Sapphire?
Or the faceless killer.
I
don't know. Is it
all right, Tom? Your fucking numbers, that boy.
The thing about Sapphire and Steel, though, is that the time it was made and how it was broadcast is so crucial to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That
we've got one studio for 3 weeks before the strike comes in.
It's just the atmosphere of it, the feel of it, the people in it.
And the appetite for sci-fi, because there was almost nothing else out
there. But it was just so, that was so crucial to how it worked.
I was re-watching Adventure 2 just the other week. I think it was the best thing that's ever been on ITV.
Yeah, that's the Long Way to Tipperary.
Sorry?
It's a Long Way to Tipperary. Yeah.
Better than Bottle Boys?
Yeah, better than Bottle Boys.
Fuck, really?
Anyway, shall we... We've got to the end of the film.
We've got to the end of the film. Now, what else have we got?
Starting again.
Yeah. Any final comments?
There's very random comments coming now. We've completely lost the two people that were watching. And they seem to be just talking amongst themselves.
Yeah.
So
George White
has
told us, reminds me of an actor who was actually Irish, Edward Mulhere, Devon in Knight Rider, had an RP drama school accent, but was Corkonian.
Is that the word, Corkonian?
Apparently, yeah. And lots of people like the photographs of me when I was a kid.
There you go. So that's been our live commentary, which apparently has sounded largely like a multiple voices Norman Collier.
Yeah, can I suggest it sounds like the Ghostbusters game on ZX Spectrum?
which sounded like. Anyway, we gave it a chance.
Yeah, we'll stick it out on a podcast.
And at some point we'll cut the audio, which we've recorded as well. I'll just stick it up.
And thanks to
Mr. Mark Miller.
Yeah,
thanks for having me. Thanks for the crisps.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So long and thanks for the crisps.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.